Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. If you're watching on the stream, you can see I have my buddy Kelly Motto here with me. How far do we go back?
Let's see. It was back when Stephen D.C. still had a job. So
it was, long time.
I still had a job in St. Louis, I should say. So it's been over 20 years.
I mean, before I started my career.
Mm-hmm.
So longer than 25 years.
Literally, I remember you would come in. So when I was a producer for Stephen D.C., you would come in and do a law segment once a week.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, since I didn't know anything about the law, it just ended up being like jackass comedy.
Right. Yeah. So. And then, you know, it just, like, I remember watching your career evolve because then, you know, Stephen D.C. got fired for like the 40th time and I was out of work, but like just kind of watching your show grow and grow and grow. And then it was a couple years later and you were just kicking butt and I'm so proud of you and what you've
Thank
built.
Thank you. Same.
So, I mean, it's just so cool.
I just keep like, so I've tracked your career because as you know, I'm not an online person. Right. I don't have a lot of social media.
Yep.
But then when I got TikTok, I'm like, Kelly.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm everywhere.
I said something to Marie. She's like, oh my God, she's everywhere. Like she's huge. I'm like, what do you mean she's huge? Like she's huge. Like nationally, everyone knows her. So.
Yeah. It's like I have two different lives. So because I was born and raised right around here. Well, I'm from Granite City. We're both Illinois
Planet
kids.
Granite.
Yeah. And because I was raised here and like got famous while still living here, like nobody really cares and it's awesome, you know.
Yeah.
But then I go on tour and it's like these crazy old women think I'm like Donny Osmond, and it's like I have these two very separate lives to where people who have known me my whole life don't even know that I have this whole other career, and then other people it's like I'm on their phone 24 hours a day and they're so sick of me.
Yeah.
Even my mom is like, why are you on my YouTube? I don't know, Mom.
So take me back to when you started this. How much of it was intentional,
mm-hmm.
planning, I think this is my niche, and how much was just throwing stuff out there, seeing what stuck, and then it just sort of built and built and built?
I was just doing whatever was fun for me. And so I've been an oversharer my whole life. I was the kid in kindergarten who would tell my teacher everything going on at home, you know, what mom and dad fought about or who was in trouble for what. I've always just been an open book. And then when Facebook started happening, you know, I kind of grew really quickly on there, and I would do silly lives just with my family, and everybody loved it. And then I did like a podcast and a blog. And so then when COVID rolled around and everybody was stuck at home, and I was, you know, as an extrovert, oh, it was horrible. Horrible. Like the only thing I could do was get up and make these stupid videos. And it was at a time when everyone was taking COVID very seriously, and I don't know how to take anything seriously. So while I was staying home and wearing my mask and doing the things I was supposed to do, I was also making funny videos about it. And the people on TikTok loved it. And then I tried sharing it on Facebook once, and it was like, oh my gosh, they like a symphony of buttholes clenched at the same time. They were like, this is not funny.
I know that symphony.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the new name of my band. That's good.
Symphony of buttholes.
Yeah.
And so while the rest of the world on Facebook just fought for years and years and years, I found this literal family. It was like on TikTok. It was like this little pocket of like fun people. Like all the fun people are on TikTok. Dave, you need to be on TikTok, and you need to be active on it, because our personalities are very similar and you would love it.
Yeah, I do need to do more. I need to step out. I mean, just doing this stream, mm-hmm. I fought because I was like, no.
Why?
I mean, like, you know, because I'm old school. It's like, no, it's theater of the mind. And now people are just going to watch me stand still, which is not exactly the most exciting thing to watch. Like, it's different for stand-ups, different for playing mm-hmm. in the band. But this just didn't feel like the kind of thing that was like, oh, let's watch Dave talking to a microphone.
But it is, because nobody has an attention span anymore. So people need more than just one, like, stimuli. They need to hear it. They need to see it. So whatever young kid talked you into doing the stream, you tell them thank you, because you should have been doing it a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I'm like you. I fight technology all the time. But when it comes to this stuff, you just got to kind of evolve with it.
Yeah. Talking to Kelly Motto here. So do a formal introduction to yourself for the people out there listening. And I don't mean to make fun of my listenership, mm-hmm. but some of the older people who may not be familiar with your content or your past with Stephen D.C., just give like a comprehensive introduction.
Yeah. So I've lived in the St. Louis area for 20 years. Sorry, I'm 46. I lived here for 46 years. I don't know what I was going to say. I've always worked in some kind of media. I've done photography and video. I worked at Fox 2 for a little while. And I've just always shared my life online. I've got three kids. I met my now ex-husband, Jimmy Mano, on the Stephen D.C. show. We're still great friends. So a lot of people, if they listen to Stephen D.C., they might remember back then, because we got married on the air and everything. I mean, it was like we just lived our lives on that show. And then since then, it's just like, you know, I'm just a busy mom and sharing my life with the world, and it's just kind of worked. I don't know how, I don't get the hype, but I'm here for it. So,
yeah. And like you said, you ride it until the wave crashes, right?
Right.
Both
of
us.
And I didn't mean to really fall into this Gen X like niche. I kind of do a little bit of everything. It's just whatever's genuine to me, right? Like, I love rap music. Like, I love it. I drove a minivan that had Thug Life on the license plates for 17 years. Like, I love rap music. And I also love kittens, you know? But then I also love talking about my childhood and growing up with, you know, our parents didn't know where we were all day long, and they needed commercials to remind us that we existed and stuff like that. And when I started talking about that stuff, it really sort of grabbed hold. Yeah. And then one of the bigger things that happened was some younger kids on TikTok were trying to make this dance to Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby. And they had their own choreography. And these were like young kids. This was just a couple years ago. And I was like, oh, no. I'm like, you do not desecrate Ice Ice Baby. There's already a dance to it, and here is how it goes. And I did the entire choreography, and I was like, don't let me ever see that crap online again. Well, Vanilla Ice saw it. And he's like, oh, my God, I love you. Come out to my show. And now Vanilla Ice is like my homie.
Wow.
And yeah, and that's the thing about social media is that, like, celebrities are fans of you and you don't realize it. And then all of a sudden, like, Carrie Underwood shared your thing or commented. And I'm like, what?
That's crazy.
How do you know who I am?
Yeah.
But yeah, so even, like, I do a lot of Gen X content. I do a lot of making fun of boomers in a fun way, you know, and millennials in a fun way. I don't take it that seriously. Some people think I, like, walk around all day grumbling about, like, Gen X stuff, but I don't. It's just for fun.
And we kind of had the same upbringing. I remember growing up in South Texas, Granite City and Hartford were the only places I could look down on, right? You were useful to me. I mean, when I had to feel better about myself, we'd go to Pontoon Beach.
Oh, so, yeah, baby.
But we grew up the same way, just like mosquito foggers and...
Yeah, who can hold their breath?
Pedophiles, half of the people in your neighborhood, you know?
Dave, I do an entire bit in my comedy routine based on something that you said. You inspired this entire bit that I do about how the banning of jarts in 1986 started the pussification of America. You said that once. I do an entire bit on this on stage. I bring the jarts on stage.
Wow.
Because I have two sets that I bought illegally. And, you know, like, just so anytime I listen to you, it's like, you know, I relate to everything you say. And so then, you know, when I say it to my audience, they relate. And it just all...
That's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, when I used to tell people I was from Granite City, they're like, oh, I wasn't allowed to go there. I'm like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's cool.
I mean, South Texas was literally across the tracks.
It literally was across the tracks.
Right.
Yeah, that was a rough area too. And so, but yeah, it made us tough. I mean, you can't hurt my feelings. I don't have any.
But we didn't know
Raising
it.
Raising my hand.
Right?
Yeah.
I didn't know it. I didn't know I was lower middle class or upper lower class.
Like, I had no idea I was poor till I got older. And I was like, whoa. We were really broke, you know? And so, yeah, and that's the thing about being raised in the areas that we were raised in, is it's not like, in a lot of cities, you have different levels of income, but in places like Granite and Roxanne, like, there's no rich people there.
Yeah.
Everyone's on the same playing field.
Yeah.
And so that's what I love about being raised there, is
totally
that nobody
agree.
Was better than anyone else. So now, like, where I live now, in, like, suburban paradise, like, I don't take a lot of crap from people because it doesn't impress me if someone has money.
Exactly the same.
Yeah.
Exactly the same. And honestly, if you gave me the choice and said you could reverse it and grow up in Ladue, maybe I would take it because I'd be farther along now or something. I wouldn't trade the childhood, though.
No way. No way.
Ladue parents cared too much.
Yeah, of course they did.
I wanted my parents who didn't care much at all. I mean,
our parents would lock us out of the house every morning at like 8 a.m. and send us on our way. And I know that they thought that other parents were, I guess, like feeding us or letting us use the bathroom. But we were just like eating mulberries and pooping in the woods. Like,
yeah.
We would ride our bikes so far, you know, and then, like I said, they had to come up with a literal commercial to remind our parents that they had kids.
Yeah.
Every night at 10 p.m. It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are? And that was a paid for PSA because it was such a pandemic that parents didn't know.
Celebrities were doing the VO. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They had Cyndi Lauper because these boomers would go to bed and would completely forget their kids existed. You know, and I got to admit, I had it kind of easy because I did have one of the few still. My mom worked from home. So I didn't have it quite as hard as some of the other Gen Xers, but I still lived the childhood, and it was the best.
So I went from Jack and Francis, never saw a whipping they didn't like, made me pick my own switch mm-hmm. from the honeysuckle tree. And mm-hmm. if I didn't pick a big enough one, they'd pick one. So you picked one just right so it didn't whelp you kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then I became a wuss dad.
Of course you did.
Did you?
No. And it's people like you that gave out all the participation trophies.
Yeah.
My gosh. No. My, you come to my house, there's like a trampoline with no net. You know, my husband's like, hey, we got to put up the safety net. I'm like, no, we don't. How are they going to learn not to fall off? You know? And so my kids definitely have it a lot easier than I did.
Yeah.
But no, I am not raising spoiled kids. I'm not like a lawnmower parent, the ones that just like just blaze the way for them. My girls don't ever ask for Lululemon pants. They don't know. No. So you became the wussy parent and gave it all the participation trophies.
And you know what? The one time it happened 2 or 3 years ago, Christmas time, that Phoebe went off on Maureen and I. Mm-hmm. And all the things I had to go off on my parents for, and I never did. And she went off on us.
Yeah.
And it was about how easy we had been and how that was not good for her and not enough discipline. And afterwards, Maureen and I were both like, what the hell was that? Like, seriously? Like, we got yelled at for being too easy and too nice and kind. And I'm like, I said to her, I'm like, look, unless you have a whole life I don't know about, unless you're some sort of, like, cat burglar, like, you just haven't gotten in trouble. I'm sorry that we didn't just find, you know what I mean?
It's like, we didn't make up reasons for you to get in trouble. You know what? Kids today, they will always want something to complain about. It's, like, fashionable or cool to be, like, the victim or have, like,
trauma.
Yeah, the girls who are like, my trauma. No. And I told my daughters, I'm like, if I ever see you making a crying video on social media, you're grounded forever. Like, that's not, we don't show emotion like that. That's not what you do. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. Kids are always going to complain about something. You know, once in a while, my kids will complain about something I do. I'm like, if that's the worst thing you got to worry about with me as a mom, you're doing great.
Yeah.
You're doing great. 100%. So don't feel bad that you were a wuss dad, especially because with Phoebe being a girl, I can see how that's a little bit. I would like to think that I was fair to all my kids, but I was probably a little bit easier on my son just because I wanted my girls to be tough, you know? And so kind of same thing with dads. They want their daughters to be soft and protected.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. We do the best we can.
Yeah. Everyone does.
We do the best we can, but I'll say this, and I'm looking right at the boomers. I never asked my 8-year-old to take the wheel of the car going 80 miles an hour on the highway so I could light a cigarette.
Yeah.
I mean,
hold this.
Right. I mean, people want to know why we didn't wear seatbelts growing up, and it wasn't because we didn't like have them. We had assignments, like we had crap to do.
Yeah.
You know, we had to take the wheel for mom. We had to climb in the back and get a beer for dad. You know, everyone had somebody with like a hole in the floorboard of their car. So sometimes we were on trash duty.
Yeah. Someone asked me one time, did your dad ever let you sit on his lap and steer? And I'm like, oh, in my neighborhood, it's when they had too many Falstaffs. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like a fun thing. Like,
it's a responsibility.
It was a responsibility. It was like, I can't see straight.
The thing is that nobody in Gen X ever learned how to drive. Nobody taught us how to drive. We all just knew how, because at some point in our childhood, we were 12 and leaving somewhere, and we were the most sober one in the family, and dad threw you the keys.
Yeah.
And that's how you learned.
Yeah.
You know, there was no lessons on driving. It was just, you always knew how to do it because our parents didn't care.
Then I went down to Southern Illinois, where my cousins lived on a farm, and they were driving combines.
Yep.
Boom. Right? I mean, there's always someone who's even more like screwed up than you. So
I like to think so. But yeah, no, nobody taught us how to drive. There were no lessons. You just always knew if you grew up Gen X.
So you have a show coming up. Before we take a break, let's tell everyone about that.
Yeah, so I have combined forces with three other Gen X content creators, and it's called the Gen X Takeover. So we go in a city and we sort of take over and do a couple shows, and then we go to bed at 9 p.m. like good Gen Xers. So I told them we got to do St. Louis. We've been on tour all year. I said, let's come home. I've never done a show here. So we are going to be at the Factory on Sunday, June 1st. The show is at 5 p.m. Tickets are still on sale, but there are about 130 left, and that is it. And the website is GenXTakeover.com.
5 p.m. is genius. Chef's kiss to you.
You're welcome. That was my idea.
Yeah. So my band played for 20 years and we're getting back together. And so we did like 700 gigs, 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. Right?
No.
And I tried telling the bar owners back then, I'm like, look, the people coming out to see my show are my age. 9 p.m. is legit bed. I mean, it's legit at least crawl into bed and start watching TV or something.
You have to know your audience. So they had slated our show for 7. And I said, uh-uh, let's scooch that back just a little bit to 5 p.m. And I've had so many people comment on how happy they are.
Welcome back, guys. DG SM KMOX 225. My old friend Kelly Mano's here with us. She is doing a show at the factory on June 1st. Doors are at 4 p.m. The show is at 5 p.m. So check that out. How do they get tickets for that, Kelly?
They go to genxtakeover.com. And we also have an added VIP option if you want to meet us and do a little after show and a photo op and all that kind of stuff. But just genxtakeover.com.
So are you like me? I am like the WB Frog. I'm either on or I'm off.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You relate?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, and that's kind of with everything in my life. I'm always like one extreme or the other, but it's like if I do a show when I come home, everybody knows like I don't want to talk.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me for like 12 hours because while I'm very much an extrovert, I lose my social battery very easily. And when it's like hitting a brick wall.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm just not going to move all day. I'm going to bed rot.
I don't know about you, but I feel like two generations have grown up now not knowing how to do anything because my kids don't know how to do anything because I don't know how to do anything. But I don't know how to do anything because every board or light I ever held for my dad ended up in an MFN, right?
You did it wrong, right?
Right.
Yes. You have PTSD from holding a flashlight.
Yes. So just like so critical. Everything is so critical. You're so stupid. You're so this.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny because we all grew up that way, but it's not when you're in your therapist's office.
No.
Right?
Right? No. I mean, you think about the things that our parents used to say to us, and it's insane. You know, like the daily death threats were like, you know, I could never look at my kids and say with a straight face, I brought you into this world. I can take you out of
it. And mean it.
Oh, they meant it.
Yeah.
They meant it. And it was like, Mom, I'm bored. They're like, go play in traffic. Could you imagine? Like, now, while I was not a wuss parent, I also wasn't, you know, I wasn't raising my kids like I'm a boomer. But yeah, I mean, our boomer parents could turn anything violent.
Yeah.
Anything.
I think our parents had us because they had to.
100%.
And a lot of people have kids now like as accessories.
Right, to show off.
Yeah.
We were like a burden to them.
Yes.
And now, like, going back and looking at all the things that the boomers would make up to make our lives miserable, I'm starting to put it all together. So like when they told us that if you went swimming, if you ate any food, your stomach would cramp and you would sink to the bottom and die.
You gotta wait a half hour.
I'm like, why would they tell us that? I'm like, oh, they didn't want to feed us. They didn't want to pay for our nachos at the pool. And the only way to not have to pay for that was to tell us this crazy story.
Remember when you found out quicksand wasn't a thing?
Oh, yeah. Or that I wasn't going to be offered drugs all the time. You know, Nancy Reagan was like practice saying no. I'm like, I thought way more people were going to offer me drugs.
Yeah, no one offers them to me anymore at all. So
Then our parents would just leave us home by ourselves all the time.
Yeah.
But we were never allowed to say we were home alone. We had to say our parents were in the shower.
Right.
Because they didn't want their friends to know that they were abandoning us all day.
And then when someone would call and I'd say to my mom, tell them I'm not here. And she'd say, I don't lie. And I'd say, tell them I'm in the bath. And she'd say, go stand in the bath. And then she'd lie her ass off.
Yeah.
I'd have to hear her lie her ass off all the time. But when it was for me, so they just wouldn't do it.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, like our first bullies were our parents. You know, 100%. Like that was our first bullies, but I mean, in a way, in a sick way, it was a way for us to earn their pride, their approval. I guess it made us tough.
Yes,
it were. I'm glad things have balanced out, and it's not the same, and that we don't threaten our kids anymore. But
all right, when we come back, we're talking to Ricky Horton. But when we get back with Kelly, I want to know what she thinks our kids are going to be like as parents. Quick break, right back. DGS and KMOX. Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Time to talk to our pal Ricky Horton. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Dave. Hey, I can't be having a better day. I just played 18 holes with my friends at Whitmore Country Club. Now I'm getting to talk to my friends at KMOX. Then I'm going to get to see some other friends at the ballpark at Busch Stadium tonight. What a day!
Pretty nice
Man.
Day.
Living the life, Rick.
Yeah. Whitmore's my
it's
club
the
out
life.
There. I love Whitmore.
Yeah, there's a few trees out of bounds named after you. I noticed they have little plaques.
So I did something last night, Rick, I've never done before. I got to sit in the green seats last night at the game.
How cool was that? Well, I mean, and you had another good game to watch, too. The Cardinals have been given a bunch of those. But, there's something about, you know, you don't have to do that every time. I mean, there's something about sitting in the bleachers in Wrigley, and I know you've done that, or sitting in the green seats. Or, I mean, there's really not a bad seat in the house, depending upon kind of, you know, the attitude you bring to it, I guess. But and the people you're with. I mean, it really still is a kind of a connection game to me. And, you know, the seats, it matters. But, you still just like to be able to connect with the people around you, too.
I tell you what, and not just, I mean, I'm not trying to be funny here. When Nick and I went to Chicago this past weekend, we saw two White Sox-Cubs games. And the first time in a really long time, I saw bad baseball. The Sox are just not good. Like, they don't hit cutoff guys and things like that. And it really made me appreciate our team even more.
Well, especially on the defensive side. I mean, if you see guys missing cutoff, man, and then you see, you know, Cardinals not only doing all the little things right, but making some great plays, too. I mean, yeah, defense, you know, people kind of just dismiss defense in baseball. Not everybody does, but a lot of people like to see runs. I mean, it's like watching a soccer game, and all you care about is the goal. I get that, but, boy, there's a lot of other things that go on in a soccer game that are very athletic and have a lot of artistry to it that is worth watching.
Go ahead, Wheels.
Rick, it's a fascinating run, right? I mean, you know, a month ago, there was, three weeks ago, there was concern about a whole bunch of things, right? The rotation hadn't been going well. They hadn't pieced together the bullpen, but they've kind of got that now. The lineup was okay, but not dominating. It was good, though. It was pretty good. And now you've gone 13-2 in the last 15, and both losses are 2-1 losses. So you really could have won every one of the last 15 games. And there are clearly still not things going well, but it doesn't matter when so many things are clicking.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, things don't go well on the 27 Yankees. I'm sure there was a pitcher that had a bad year on the 27 Yankees. And so, you know, and actually we've been talking a lot about lately and just thinking about it, Nolan Gorman and Jordan Walker are getting off to a slow start, although Jordan's had a couple of very good at-bats this week. Mm-hmm. But them having slow starts in the midst of the team getting 10 hits every night, you kind of go, oh, that's okay. I mean, we'll worry about that later because there's something else. It's not so glaring, and I think it's good for them, too, to just have some breathing room to kind of get better. And so, you know, I honestly think about this team, and I started saying it in spring training that, you know, it's 40-year anniversary of the 85 Cardinals, and, you know, we were predicted to come in last place, but everybody got better, and that's how you win. Everybody gets better, and we were young, and everybody got better, and people you didn't even know about, all of a sudden you're talking about. Willie McGee, John Tudor. I mean, those weren't kind of frontline names prior to 85, but the fact that they were able to have those career years, and again, I'm not saying it's going to be repeated and we're going to win the pennant, but, you know, you just keep playing, you never know.
Yeah. Well, so I want to run something by you that we talked about last night on Red Bull Rush Hour. So it was me and Matt Pauly and Bernie Miklas, and it started off with Matthew Liberatore, right? He's 25 now. He was not ready to be this guy 2 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe not even last year, but he learned some lessons last year pitching in shorter stints as a reliever, and it built some confidence. And I wanted to ask you, and because this is what we brought up, is that kind of dynamic easy enough to do with a position player where maybe you give Gorman and Walker, who you just brought up, some bites at the apple where it's more advantageous to them, and then let them kind of grow into it, kind of the way Liberatore's grown into being a starter?
Yeah, again, I think it's easier when you're winning to do that. I mean, to find bits and pieces. And I mean, when you're losing, then it's like, oh, no. And then people are starting pointing the fingers, not in the clubhouse. They typically don't. I've been on teams that did that, too. But, you know, I haven't seen that in St. Louis since I've been there. But, you know, there are teams that will kind of turn on each other. But I think the kind of adjustment you're talking about, the kind of leeway, that's an even shorter runway, if you will use that word again. But, you know, honestly, I'm thinking about, and I heard you guys talking too, I'm giving some credit. Liberatore is a great example. Alec Burleson, who I also heard you guys talking about, another great example of guys that were given very specific, here's how you get better marching orders after the season last year. Okay, Burley, you're a great hitter when the ball's in the middle of the zone. Libby, you're much better when you're going direct to the plate and you're letting it go. And I mean, instead of just kind of picking. So I think they gave them marching orders, which they've responded to their credit. But I also think it's good on the Cardinals for kind of figuring out what those things are.
Ricky, I love the fact that Arenado called Marmol aside and said, I shouldn't be hitting where I'm hitting. You should put me lower in the lineup. I thought that was great.
Yeah. I mean, we were very quick to on the broadcast because we knew that. We'd heard that. And actually, Nolan said it publicly, at one point. So, you know, it's kind of like, hey, I mean, so people don't kind of run with a story that's not true. And, you know, that we fight that enough where there's stories that aren't true that people run with. And I just wanted to make sure folks know that is That is a really good teammate doing that. It really is. And it doesn't make him play any less hard, doesn't make him any less confident either. Now, some people may be saying, oh, he's abdicating. I mean, who knows what people say what they want. But the point is that that's something a good teammate does.
I also need to admit that I was wrong, at least temporarily. I was ready to trade Michaelis for a bag of beans, and he's been great lately.
Well, you probably would have been disappointed in the bag of beans, too. I mean, after, you know, what are you going to do with a bag of beans? So, I mean, you know, you cook them for a couple of nights, Dave, and then that's okay, I'm done, right? And so, but you know, Miles has been a two-time All-Star. Yes, there's a lot of reasons for you to think that as based on last year, and he would agree with that. And so he's just been able to, and there's another guy that the Cardinals have very specifically, Dusty Blake has very specifically rechanged or change some of the trajectory of some of his pitches, some of the shape is the word they like to use now, shape of pitches to make him more effective. And he, too, is taking some marching orders that he's responding to and is creating better results. So, that I mean, that's what coaching is, and that's what players trying to get better is.
I'd say, Ricky, all of this falls under something that I think has been again, you got some new members of the coaching staff. You've actually obviously had some time to get people, and the people that have been here have had time to work together now for a few years. But it felt like in years past when things weren't working with individual players or whatever, it felt like they were slow to adapt. And the adaptation seems to be happening so much faster this year. Whether it's a change on a position, like, you know, we have to move Ryan Fernandez out. And you don't want to, but you kind of have to. Like, those changes are happening. I don't know if it looks that way to you, but it feels like the adaptability is coming quicker.
Well, think about being a young player, and you get to the big leagues, and you're not really sure of the kind of the pecking order of who to listen to. I mean, that's a problem in baseball today, and it's not just the card. It's league-wide that I've got my guru back home. There's a guru here. There's another guy, and there's another coach. We've got eight coaches, and which one do I listen to? I think the coaches have really developed a great core now, too, and they have made sure that players are listening to the one voice, and I think players have bought into that. And, yeah, I mean, every once in a while you're going to get something from a teammate even. Hey, right, here's a new grip. I've tried this grip. I'm not saying never learn from somebody else, but there has to be a unified approach, and I think the Cardinals have that like they've never had it, at least in the last, let's say, 10 years.
Don't want to underestimate the impact of the guys on the staff either, right? I mean, Brant Brown being new, sometimes a new voice it can be a similar message, but a different way of putting it where it clicks with a different guy. John Jay's energy, Daniel Descalso, and obviously Ollie's still very young for a big league manager, but the newer guys joining the guys that were already there seem to have made a pretty big impact.
Yeah, I mean, if we had more time to talk about that, I think I could give you four of Brant Brown's sayings that players are responding to that are different words than Turner Ward would have said, but the same thing,
right,
or anybody else would have said.
Right.
But they're just clicking. For whatever reason, they're clicking. So that's not a knock on anybody. It's just that it's working. He's the right voice at the right time. And, you know, leaders rise in those moments. They rise to the occasion when they're given the opportunity, given the voice. And he's clearly made a difference in that clubhouse with that staff and with the offense.
All right, buddy. Have a great game tonight. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Well, good to chat with you guys. You guys can ask me my score later.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. My buddy Kelly Mano is here with us for another segment. You look fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
We've known each other like 30 years.
A long time.
30 years. You look great.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I got a little Botox, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I got it for the first time last year. I got it for free as like a trade, and then I did it one more time. So I've now done Botox twice. I'm telling you now, it's a slippery slope. It's a slippery slope.
I'm wearing a hairpiece right now.
Are you?
Yeah. I wanted it to be really subtle. So
it worked.
I'm just going to add to it a little bit, you know?
Just a couple hairs at a time.
What if you just pieced it together?
That's a dickin'. I woke up the other morning with a 3-inch hair sticking out of the...
And it's like, what?
Just overnight?
Yeah, overnight.
That's great.
How can that one little hair grow so much and then the rest just nothing? Like
nothing.
Slackers. Like
just a little comb over.
That one little guy's
part
just like,
in the
woo!
Middle.
Yeah.
So we talked about our parents. We talked about our parenting.
Yeah.
What do you expect from your kids when you're a grandma?
It's hard. I feel like... On one hand, I think that Gen Z is going to be really well off because they are very good at, because they've kind of been raised as like princesses, it's like they know how to set boundaries. So Gen Z has been really good about like speaking out about mental health, something we are never allowed to talk about, breaking generational trauma, going no contact with parents and things like that. They are really good at spotting toxic situations and taking themselves out of it. So for that, I think they're going to do great. But the problem is going to be when they get older and realize that they're not like, they're not special. Like now it's like everything, every symptom is a disorder or a different category to put yourself in when we're all just a bunch of boring adults. You know, it's like these kids who are superstar athletes now, it's like, dude, your kid's going to grow up and be a boring adult like the rest of us. Quit putting all this crap in their brain that they're so special and, you know, and yeah, they're special to you. But I don't know. What do you think they're going to be like?
My kids tell me that they're going to be hard asses. Yeah.
Maybe kids like ours or yours will not be as wussy of parents because they're kind of, our kids are kind of self-absorbed. And I don't even mean that in a negative way. It's like they have thought their entire life it's all about them. Yeah. So as they become adults, they may keep that theory of, hey, this is about me and this is mom's time. And no, I'm not dropping everything for my kid, you know, because that's not how I was raised.
Yeah. They're also going to find out that being a tough parent is hard.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to not be.
Oh, yeah, it is. Trust me, because
being a parent is hard, period.
But
being the crackdown, man, nobody wants to be the bad guy.
Yeah, and then there's always two. My ex-husband was a pushover. I mean, just complete, like, he would lay down like a doormat for the kids if he could. And then I remember the first time my son ever really got in trouble, he got caught with a vape at school in eighth grade. And I was like, well, how I react to this is going to set the tone for all my parenting. So I took his door off the hinges and threw it down the stairs. And I pulled his TV off the wall. I took his phone completely away from him. Not, oh, just keep it for an emergencies. Parents today are stupid. They will like be like, oh, I took Snapchat away from my kid. I'm like, what did you do? Delete it from their phone? They're like, yeah. I'm like, you idiot. They're logging in on their friend's phone. You got to change their password. So that's where I did good, was I was smarter than my kids. And, you know, things like that, and taking his phone. And he's like, well, what do I do if there's an intruder at school and I have to run from him and I can't contact you? I'm like, when you're running from the shooter, you better be like, I should have not vaped in algebra class. Or I'd be able to call my mom right now. It's not my fault you can't call me. It's your fault.
Did you scare Jimmy as much as you did the kids?
Yes. Yeah. 100%. Because there were times where I have to call myself. I'm like, you listen to me right now. You listen. If you can't handle this, get out of the room. Because this is how it's going to go down. This is how it's going to go down. So, but my oldest, Rocky, he was just notorious for getting in trouble for stupid stuff, like having a vape at school. Yeah. I'm like, you're not even good at doing it. Like, right. I was way better at not getting caught than you.
Right.
Like, come on.
Right.
He got caught stealing a beer from a gas station on prom night. And I'm like, your technique sucked. No wonder you got caught. Like, gosh, kid. Like, let me show you how to steal a 40. It's not going to fit in your sleeve. Come on. But, yeah. But, you know, nice cop, bad cop. It all balances out.
What kind of shenanigans were you getting up to in Granite City back in the day?
Oh, just, I mean, like, waking up, like, in a field drunk of vodka poisoning, like, not knowing where I was. Like, yeah. Like, I'd be, like, 15 years old, and, you know, my mom would have no idea. One day I told her I was going to the mall and I went skydiving. Literally jumped out of a plane. My 15-year-old scared to order food at a restaurant. So it's like, it's just... It's two different worlds, and, you know, we didn't have safe spaces or trigger warnings. Nobody had to tell us not to eat laundry detergent. You know, it's just...
We figured that out.
We had survival skills, yeah.
And kids today have no survival skills. That's where I worry, because it's like, well, what if one day, like, the internet goes down? They don't know how to drive anywhere. They don't know how to fix their car.
Don't know directions.
They don't know directions. Like, they don't know. They wouldn't know how to charge your car battery if they didn't have it to Google.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of both. I think that they're going to do good, and yeah, it's going to be fun.
So when your kids are bringing people home, mm-hmm. are they going to tell them my mom's insane?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. No, they already know that. And I've always kind of worn that proudly, because it's like, if your kid bullies mine, you better both know how to fight. Because, like, I'm not, butthole kids come from butthole parents. And so it's like, unless you treat it head on, you know, I do a joke in my bed. I'm like, have you ever looked up a kid's mom on Facebook to see if you could take her? Because I've done that so many times. And I'm like, dude, don't let her kid talk to you like that. This chick's got bangs. I can take her. Like, I'm not, you know, and I'm not ever worried about being called like a psychotic parent. That's almost like the point, is that if you've got a kid who's like a bully, chances are good their parents don't give a crap who they're bullying. But if you're so psychotic that even the bully parents is like, just leave the Mano kid alone because I'm not dealing with her mom, then you've won.
You've won. Kelly has a show coming up Sunday, June 1st at the Factory. Doors are at 4. Show is at 5. Only like 100 tickets left. So you can go out there and get these, and you get them again where?
Go to GenXTakeOver.com and you can see the co-hosts of my show, Nick Harrison, John the Dad Bod Veteran, and Slim Sherry. The minute you see all their faces, you're going to be like, oh my God, I follow all of these people. And it's like we all found each other, and it's like a just big fun Gen X group therapy.
Love you. Aww, so proud
of
you.
Thank you. I'm proud of you too.